At no time am I playing with y'all. No use pretending it's all over. Yeah, yeah. Phone it in, dog. It's a wrap, it's a wrap.
Yeah, life's bam. Boom. Welcome to the Comedy Outliers podcast. What a day.
Yeah, it's been long. I got your email. I got your email saying this is what we're gonna talk about. And I was just like, "Oh, gonna be a long day.
It's gonna be a long. It's gonna be a long. But I don't even know if we're gonna hit all of that. I mean, we've done so many podcasts over the years where we've had no pre-pro, and this was like, "Hey, here's some topics. Let's see if this changes the flow.
Yep,
the vibe." You know,
and we're not yet at the place where we can have a full time producer like saying this is what y'all gonna talk about every damn day. You know, this is these are stories to bring up. Oh, shit,
we need to. I mean, I think we could, but I don't have any money to pay anybody right now to embark in that level of production. Right now, it's like, hey, I could do some pre pro, I can make it work. You know, So yeah, like this is gonna be like, let's go into the first topic, right?
Okay. I'm just watching you all close to the camera, like you.
I don't like doing a video if I have to do the video. Like this is the thing that I didn't like about doing Sam B. Right?
Okay.
I'm finally on the show. Finally, could have all my comedic talents, have fun, personality, and it's like I'm on TV. What happens? And they're like, yo, you're just going to have to do Zoom calls all the time. So now I'm in a fucking box and trying to figure out how to make myself look better on the Zoom. And I didn't, like, this is not what I signed up for. Like, can you send somebody to my house? Yeah, can you send a wardrobe person?
Yeah, look at my eyebrows. They ain't going to fix themselves.
They ain't going to do this. They're going to see the receding hairline and shit. Man, fuck that. I'm shaving my head. Fuck it. This is where we're at now. So now I'm in this stupid Zoom box trying to make it work, and it just looks, it feels weird, and nobody cares about it, but it's like me being self-conscious about it. You know what I mean?
You did eventually get to film some stuff in the field, though. That was nice. You know, you got to go outside.
Yeah. But the thing is, when I did all the field work, when I was working out on the fields. Once I said it, I hated it.
You're like one of the few black correspondents of the show. They got you out of the field and shit.
I like how it's few. It was just me and Ashley Nicole Black. Shout out to her. But she left before I got there.
Oh, you know,
doing great things. Shout out to her. Yeah, I think it's so funny because, like, when I got hired, like, it happened to be right before the pandemic hit. Mm-hmm. So that's right before everybody was just trying to hire black people. Remember, because George Floyd and everything was happening. Black bots were like, oh, what should we? We better get some niggas in here. Like, that's what the feel was.
Yep.
And for Sam,
that's
Sam's
going
show,
away, by the way. That's
No. That's done. No, now they're looking around like, time to get some of these niggas out of here. Like, mm-hmm. They're ready to go. Are you feeling that in LA at all?
Oh, absolutely. Like, do you feel that? That's all I feel is like the regression of investment DEI in the industry. The prioritization of people of color stories, despite the fact that you look at Mario, right? Mario is like going to be the biggest animated film of all time, apparently.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
41% of the demographic that's buying a ticket, Latino. Yet they represent like 5% of working people in Hollywood, right? You know what I mean? So it's like, they're not trying to see us yet, even though we out here buying tickets, we out here investing in franchises, we're out here trying to see our representation on the screen. That's why streamers have been killing it, to be honest with you. If you really think about it, the reason why streamers have been killing it versus like Hollywood studios is because they were willing to invest whatever money they did have in like these limited series and stuff that did primarily highlight people of color. I'm thinking about, you know, like, Netflix has a lot of dope shit. Amazon has a lot of dope shit.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, these streamers are, like, investing in stories that highlight people of color. Apple TV as well.
Yeah.
But then you think about Warner Brothers, they're cutting black shit. They cut Bad Girl. I don't care how bad that shit was. It's still do something with it.
Warner Brothers, HBO, they cut that. They cut Southside.
Oh. Don't even.
They cut.
Everybody, if you like Southside, please like buy the Blu-rays or something, because I have a feeling they're going to take those motherfuckers off the air soon. They don't want to pay those black people residuals.
No. Not at all. Like they all, it's funny because it's like, from my perspective, like what I started seeing was like, obviously it's like, oh, we need more black people. We need black people. Okay. We'll take it back a little further. When I used to do like the Stand Up for Diversity, I always thought the Stand Up for Diversity was kind of like, yo, we need to highlight more like black acts. Right. And that was the thing. And then it was like, no, when we mean Stand Up for Diversity, we don't just mean black. We mean just like basically not white males. It's like, oh, okay, cool. So everybody can kind of get a shot. And that feels good as a black person. Like, oh yeah, this is great. Everybody's getting some of this action. Everybody can move. And then along the way, I think that, and you know, this makes me feel like I'm getting very like super woke brand, but along the way, I think it became more diverse in sexuality and gender identity. So it's just like, oh, if you like, oh, we don't have a lot of trans voices here. We don't have a lot of like gay voices at the time. And I was like, oh, now we have like gay voices. Like, oh, we might need some trans voices, or we might need some, is it autistic now? It's like, oh, we need some like autistic voices. I mean, or just like,
that's been in the media for a minute. It's just, there was never a label for it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But that's once they figure out a way to commodify it,
then they think,
oh yeah, neurodiversity. Oh, let's have that divergence. Oh, let's do that. But they still have not given black people what I feel would be our just due. And I'm at the point of it now where it's like, I am not waiting for it. It's not going to happen in my, I don't know if it's going to happen in my lifetime. Like you'll get your Issa Rae. You get your Donald Glover. You get one person to make that thing. But you're not going to have a company. Collins. Yeah, you get your Brandon Collins. I mean, does it feel different? Does the air feel different?
You mean?
Now that you have representation?
Not at all. I mean, it's just.
It is Talk about it! My God, got reps! Let's go!
Oh, God. Sorry. Sorry for folks whose ears are bleeding just now.
Yeah, okay, fine. Let me, like, you know what? Let me apologize. As a black man, I should be more like, congratulations, my brother. Is this better for you, Brandon? Congratulations, my brother.
I think it's better for the people.
I knew you back in Astoria, we were hustling. Man, we were hustling, trying to get shows going.
Every time I tell, like, people out here, like, who are, like lived in New York, and they know about Astoria, when I tell them about having that 2-bedroom apartment and what I was paying for, they're like, why did you leave? And I'm like, I ask myself that every day. Why did you leave this place? Even though it smelled and was terribly well kept. Well, the building was. My apartment was nice. But
yeah, your apartment was nice. It was a nice section.
It was everything else outside that apartment that was a nightmare.
Man.
For my peace of mind, that was probably the best move, though. It would have been dope if I, like, during the pandemic, I could have gone away, but then I could have gone back after the pandemic. You know what I mean? Because I think being stuck in there during the pandemic would not have been good for me mentally.
In Astoria?
Or physically. Yeah, because that building had, like, there was, like, mold stuff happening. Also, like, I didn't have an outdoor space, so I would have been stuck in that building with that family during a pandemic because my landlord's family was half the building. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it depends. Yeah, because I think like there is a thing about the location of your building because like you have the park right there and that section of Astoria just has so much going on. But I remember when like the pandemic first happened, nobody wanted to go outside. So it wasn't a thing of like, yo, let me go outside, let me have fun. It's like, oh, something's happening, I'm staying inside.
Well, also the thing is too, like we ended up leaving Astoria like because I moved, you know, like to the other side of Astoria for the last year before we bought the house.
That
was the first year during the pandemic. And that summer, the 2020, you know, the George Floyd stuff happened. There was a huge block party or some shit that happened on Steinway Street, which was like a good 10-minute walk from my apartment.
Yeah.
Majority black folk. I don't know where they came from. I mean, there are projects in Astoria. It's not like that's like out of the realm of possibility. But
shout out to the project. It was a huge thing.
And then like on Astoria Facebook pages, yes, I was corny enough to follow the neighborhood Facebook pages. And they were actually, there was mad racist shit being posted. And I was like, I've been living here for like 8-9 years. And like, I feel like it's like, what's the point of investing in this community? This is how y'all feel.
That's exactly how I feel about the diversity and inclusion, those initiatives. That's how I feel about it. It's just like, you're trying to do, like, you're just trying to exist. And it's like, oh, do y'all not, y'all don't care or you don't like us. But either way, there's not opportunities happening. So why am I trying to like why would you wait for them? Exactly. Like, you just have to make them happen. But as we kind of circle back to it, congratulations, man.
Thank you, man. Yeah.
How do you? I mean, like, listen, I know that you have a lot of other podcasts you do, so people might be into, they like know what's going on with you, right?
Oh, yeah, I just got a representation from a manager who's going to help me, like, you know, get my scripts in front of people and help me get to the next step in my career as a writer and performer and producer, all that good stuff. And I mean, this guy signed me off of a script I wrote in a month and a half. Like, that's what's wild is, like, everything that I've gotten, like, you know, I've been really overthinking the script for the studio, and like, because of the WGA strike pending and everything, no one knows what's up. So no one's like really telling us anything, like, as the program's wrapping up. So I've been mad stressed about the script, but then it turns out no one gives a fuck now because no one can buy anything. And so to know that the script that, like, I just wrote, that I was excited about, that, like, it's about these two kids, it was essentially The Boondocks meets Enemy of the State. That's the script that got me into the program. And then the script that I wrote in the middle of the program that's based off a life experience I had in the Boy Scouts, that got me representation, and, like, a bunch of people were interested. And, you know, some people, like, read it, they were like, this is funny, but it's just not, like, a good fit for our management company and stuff like that. And that's just been wild. So, like, it's been dope because one of the biggest goals I had was getting some form of representation by the end of this program. And the fact that that did come into fruition is dope. It just happens to be at the worst timing possible as a writer in Hollywood, because this shit's about to shut down. Even though some people are thinking there's going to be some kind of Hail Mary thing, but there's too much to figure out, and it's going to happen.
Yeah, so tell me about the writer strike. What's going on? Because all I see is on Twitter, just like the WGA is, they're striking because I think it's all residuals, that they're not getting the proper residuals for all the streaming, like you were talking about.
It's
like
a lot focused on residuals. It's a lot focused on residuals, specifically for TV writers, so especially like when it deals with the streamers and the streamers of the big studios, that they're just not paying residuals, right? Like, there's a writer on Abbott Elementary, I'm blanking her name, but she talked about an average network show, your residual for that episode that you wrote being re-aired, you typically would get about 20 G's. Now, because of streaming and how little pieces of the pie that writers get now, she had her episode playing on Hulu, on YouTube TV, on Disney Plus, and she got a check for $23. You know what I mean? Like, and people can watch it as many times as they want. Remember, network TV, it would be like, these are reruns, check it out when you can.
You'd have to wait. You'd have to wait to watch it again. And it's like all those advertising dollars, I guess, are like connected to that thing that's getting aired again. Because people didn't have the ability to just say, okay, I'm going to press play and watch this whenever I want.
Exactly.
But when you think about it, though, it's like, well, you know, you have the Hulu, the YouTubes and all this stuff. It's like, well, I don't know what their advertising dollars are looking like. But it's different to have. But I'm just saying, like, if you have a show, let's say it's Abbott's on ABC, right?
Yep.
So you have it on ABC and you're like, hey, we're showing this one time and you get to watch it now. It's appointment television, right? And you have, I don't know how many number of viewers at that point, however many millions of viewers, and ABC is selling ads based on their viewership, right? So if you have a hit show, you have more viewers, the ads are more expensive, like the Super Bowl, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But if you have a Hulu or a YouTube, right, and you're selling ad space, you can't say, well, if one person clicks on this, that's one ad to one person. You know what I mean? Because it's where the account disparity lies. Now, as I'm saying this, I am very on the side of the writers. I would be more on the side of the writers if I was currently staffed writing on a TV show. But nonetheless, if you could only get...
Were you a writer on Sam B, or were you just listed as a...
I was just a performer, yeah. Okay. And while I was there, I was looking to get more into like production, because like I started seeing a lot of how the show was being made, and I did enjoy a lot of that. And I realized like for so many years, I was already doing production, but not at the, I would say like the kind of corporate level. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, like, oh, this is TV production. This is what this is. Like, oh, we produce this show. I produce other shows. I've done other things. I'm like, oh, wow, this is just making something. Just putting everything together to make this work. And while I was there, you could kind of feel kind of things getting weird, because I think that that's when, like you said, with Warner Brothers, right?
Yeah.
Warner Brothers, I think, is also under Turner, if I'm not mistaken, and all of these brands like TBS, TNT, HBO, all these things are all like becoming Freebie. One. Freebie. Oh, I don't know. But yeah, I was like, By the way,
real quick, and it's a quick aside, there's a show called Jury Duty on Freebie. Yo, that shit's hilarious.
I heard about that. That's where they have like the one actor dude or something.
No, they had the one, supposedly it's one writer dude surrounded by actors. So it's like the Truman Show. And yo,
that's so funny.
Like James Marsden did it. Speaking of residuals and shit. Yeah. And he's like, the dude's trying to figure out where he's from. He's like, oh yeah, I was in Sonic. And then he's like, oh, and then the next day he's like, oh, I watched Sonic last night. And James Marsden's like, oh shit, yeah? And he's like, yeah, man, it wasn't bad. It wasn't bad. He's like, did you rent it or buy it? And then he's like, no, I watched it on Hulu. And then James Marsden just looks sad. He's just like, you know, if you had bought it, I would have made a dollar.
Oh, it's over for everybody. Yeah, everybody,
it's,
bro.
It's bad funny. Like,
that's funny. That's so funny.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
There's like this running joke with him about money. It's so funny because everyone's like assuming he's rich. And he's just like,
Yeah.
Of course,
he was Cyclops. He was Cyclops for a time.
Like, so MC Hammerhead can't touch this, and he was broke as a joke.
No, they touched it. we gonna get our hands on your money. What are you doing?
The writer's strike is gonna happen because it's like streamers don't wanna give up their numbers, because then that would show real data as to how much these artists should be making, right? And then the big studios don't want to budge because they keep saying that they're still hurting from the pandemic, even though Universal is about to have a record year after Super Mario Brothers, and then they got Fast 10 right around the corner. And then they've been doing well with like these little successes with Megan and Cocaine Bear and stuff, right?
Yeah.
And so it's like, for me, I have very little sympathy for studios. I think that like the programs like the Universal Writers Program and stuff is the bare minimum that these studios could be doing to invest in creators of color, because they could have saw this happening in early 2000s. And what I mean by that is the same thing that happened to the music industry is happening now to the film and television industry, which is...
What do you mean? Just like eating itself alive?
Yo, there's this incredible book called The Appetite for Self-Destruction, I believe. It's by this writer from Rolling Stone. And he essentially broke down the destruction of like the music business based on like the advancement of technology, right? So before you had the vinyls, then you went to cassette tapes, then you went to CDs, then you went to MP3s. And the thing that fucked it up with the MP3s is that Steve Jobs openly admitted, I'm going to destroy record stores with this iPod. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. And he did it. He changed the whole music game. And then we got Spotify, we got YouTube Music, we got Amazon Music, we got Pandora, all that shit, right? Mm-hmm. And then remember what happened? The artist was saying, I'm not getting paid
nothing.
Producers saying, I'm not getting paid nothing. So then they had to figure out, how do we pay these musicians fairly where they stop complaining and they get on our side? And then that's, you know, a whole bunch of stuff has evolved from that since then.
Yeah.
But that was 10 plus years ago that stuff was happening in that industry. You're all in entertainment. Y'all should be talking to each other. So the movie studio should be like, oh damn. Like, cause it's pay for it now or pay for it later, bro. Like, and now they're going to pay even more because everything right when the box office is getting momentum, they're going to have to shut all this shit down.
It's
wild.
It's
man.
So funny,
but it's good for us.
Oh yeah. It's good. It's good for like the writers and the live entertainment. Oh yeah. It's good. I mean, that's why you should come out to Comedy Outliers the summer series. Come out to
Friday, July 7th, Union Hall, baby. Yeah,
you know, the vibes, it's going to be great. But it's a thing where like, I look at what happened with the music industry and how they didn't make less money. Right? Like
they, what do you mean?
They, like, so what they started doing was, along with being like, okay, we have to pay these artists, we have to pay them or whatever with that, they started saying, okay, let's start these 360 deals. So if we know that you're not selling these, if we know you're not selling records, then we'll invest in you as an artist, quote unquote, and we want money from your merch.
Yeah.
We want money from your touring. oh, you're a rapper and you booked a TV show, we want money from that too. And they basically became, in my opinion, like a manager of these artists, because they're like, well, the music is the thing that's putting you in front, so we want a piece of all that, right? Which is not far from probably like what some like real TV juggernaut people do, where they're just like, you know, like, hey, I'm executive producing this thing. And like, oh, I'm with you. I'm executive producing everything. Like, you can't get away from it. Like, you locked in. I don't know how the industry bounces back from it. Like, a part of me just hopes that it everything just goes rogue and everybody just like starts, it becomes like this kind of creative utopia where everybody who's independent is just like creating and making great things and you get more stars from it. But I also do see how, like, I feel, and it might just be me and just my perspective, but just like stardom has changed. And I felt that happening a lot where it's like, let's say SNL, right? There's been some times I've been SNL hosts. I'm like, who is this person? Mm. Like, where do I know this person? Like, should I know this person? Like, what have they done? They're not around. And then I also think, oh, there's not enough platforms for these people to be great and for me to see them in. You know what I mean? It's like Ali Wong, right? And I just because like talking about beef and like she's someone who's done Outliers before. And we see, like, I think, you know, she's got to this, like, in my opinion, I think it's true, like an A-list celebrity, right? It's that A-list celebrity status, right? And
also, she's pretty fucking hot for a mama, too. Not saying that can't be the case, but Jesus Christ.
What, I mean,
when I saw her on Beef, I was like, yeah, she had two kids. She had two specials when she's pregnant.
Oh, yeah. She's pregnant right now. She's pregnant.
Well, you know she's dating Bill Hader, right? Oh, we get into page six. Section of the
See, I didn't have that on it, but that's what you come to Comedy Outliers for, the tea. That's what we're doing now. We are just a tea podcast. We're not gonna talk
just some
serious
gossip
comedy
old
shit.
Motherfucker.
You heard about Ali Wong. You know she dating Barry, not Obama, nigga, the Bill Hader guy, you know, the assassin.
We really are gonna be the two old black dudes at like the barbershop of Coming to America.
Listen, next.
Just
next
talk
time
about when
do.
Randy Watson could have performed again.
Yeah. They do strict. That's what we're going to do. Stick a treat if they do it again. We're going to do that, or we'll be the black version of those Muppets just hating on everybody.
They're never going to do that show again.
Ever.
That's such a New York inside baseball thing. Like, do people care about that stuff anymore? Because I know that's what people used to come to this podcast for, to be like, what's the inside, on, you know, scoop on the comedy world and stuff? What's going on? What's going on? I'm like, I don't know, because shit is weird out here in L.A.
Well, how's it in L.A.?
Man, the comedy scene is weird, because it's like, you know, I thought New York had weird shows, like, at different locations and shit. They got, like, you know, they got the clear, you know, the typical dive bar shows. Then they have shows. I did a show in the back of a Japanese restaurant. Okay. Like, it was the back wall of a Japanese. Like, the restaurant was still, like, happening. And they just happen to sell tickets enough to sell at the restaurant, I guess.
Oh yeah. Oh no. That sounds about right. There used to be a spot like that in New York, like a Fuddruckers or some crazy shit. And you just go in the back and it's a club. Yeah.
I performed at a bookstore out here. Yeah. And then I did an open mic at a place that looked like a White Castle. Like, it literally looked like a castle. It looked like a castle. It's called the Comedy Chateau.
Shout out to the Comedy Chateau. Oh, who books that?
I don't know, but it was bad. It was bad. It was so bad. This comic went up, did like jokes essentially out of a joke book for 2 minutes. Wasn't getting nothing. I mean, there was like six of us in the room, and then he's just like pulled out some drumsticks from his pocket, and then said, "Anybody know how to drum?" And then this one dude was like, "Yeah, I do." He's like, "Come on up here," and then he pulled out a second set of drumsticks, and they just drummed on a stool for the remaining of his time. No jokes. Yeah, they were just drumming.
I mean, I definitely just went to the website, and I guess Fumi is in LA. I see Suba is on a show, on a New Faces show. I'm just looking for names of people that I either know from New York, whatever. I'm just like, okay. There's Carla Collins.
They ain't no relation. No relation.
Okay. Justin Hires. It's a funny dude. But yeah,
I mean, you don't have to read off the lineup. It's not a great place. It's like it's the comic, from what I've seen, it's the comic strip of the Valley. Like the comic strip New York, it's like that of the Valley.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
which
well,
I'm surprised that's still open, by the way. Caroline's closed, but that place is open still.
Yo, Caroline's, like when I first came to Caroline's, it was a straight restaurant upstairs with a comedy club downstairs. It was like how the Stand used to be over there, where it's like you have a, like, but it was like a huge restaurant.
Yeah.
And I think, like, there's a lot of factors. Like, if we're going to talk about the stand up comedy scene, I think there's a lot of different factors now where you have all these people who are doing, like, okay. Are we doing a, this is video too?
Yeah.
Or are we just doing audio?
Yeah, it's video.
No, I'm saying, are we putting the video out?
I mean, we can. We can cut this out. We can cut this part out.
No, we can. No. I'm going to get up too. Everybody going to get up. We can get up over two time. But what I think is that you have people going like viral, getting a viral success, yeah. TikTok success. And then you put that on. Businesses closing because of the pandemic, people not being outside and like kind of supporting live comedy. Then you have rent, like where Caroline's was.
Oh, yeah. That was
like
wild.
For Times Square. It's wild. It's like, but that was the spot. Like, but it's just like wild. And I think that a lot of these clubs never really kind of like changed with the times. Like, even when we were doing Comedy Outliers, it's like, yo, y'all should reach out to us. Have us do our show there every month and have it like, have us do this like on a Thursday or something. Yep. You know what I mean? Like have us do this on a day where, or when, like, or a day where you don't normally have people. Let proven independent producer come in there, turn it up, and then look out for us. And it would have been a nice relationship. Yeah.
Something like that with Decepticomics and New York Comedy Club?
We did. I mean, New York Comedy Club is one of the few clubs that like has, I think, been prosperous. Mm. You know, I think that like they've made one. There's like one in Atlantic City. There's
one in Connecticut, right?
The one in Connecticut.
Two places I don't want to take myself to anytime soon.
I mean, hey, it's good people over there. Shout out to Emilio.
Last time I was in Atlantic City, man, that shit was like the
worst. What you doing in Atlantic City? Yeah, I mean, listen, you just got to go out there and just know what's up. Get your check and go. Like, you know, but it's, I just think that a lot of these clubs, from what I've understood and I've seen, and it's back to what it was, just like you just need people in the seats.
Yep.
You just need asses in the seats. And it's also like there's so many comics now where everybody, like my whole Instagram feed are just comics. Like it's not, and you, I'm not even like, it's hard to even judge it by the jokes. Like, I'm just watching people. I'm like, oh, that's such a good 4K camera this person has.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if it looks good, it's probably great. Look at all the work they put into it. It's like anybody could do this shit. Skits.
Yeah, man.
You know?
It's wild how much the game has, like, changed a lot. But it's a lot of stuff that, like, I feel like won't benefit me until I'm, like, unless I am a real comic. You know what I mean? Unless I'm someone that needs to have, like, a following that goes in person. Like, obviously, I have, you know, the Comedy Outlier show, Drunk Black History and stuff. But it's, like, that kind of – those stuff tend to sell themselves. And so unless it's, like, for me as a stand-up, like, I need to put butts in the seats. Like, I'm not incentivized, really, to be putting out the content the way that a lot of people, like, that we know are doing TikToks. Because they have a whole, like – there's comics that we, like, know – they have whole teams and shit that put together their video content and everything. Like,
yeah.
And that's great for them. But at the same time, it's like they're also like at a level where they're selling out theaters and shit now. So it's like, I get it.
Yeah.
Like, you need to have that machine. But like for us, like who are, you know, working at the Chuckle Hut and shit here and there, we don't.
Working at the Chateau. Working at the White Man's Castle. What are we doing?
We don't need to be spending like $300 a day on a videographer or editor. You know what I mean? At least not yet.
But there's also the thing of like, to get to that space, it feels like you have to do it. Like it's like this weird thing where you can feel like if I'm not posting up something every day, if I'm not posting 10 times a week, then I'm not doing my job.
Yeah, man.
And it's like that's not really part of it. I mean, like, I know for me, I had to like really just sit back and think of like, okay, why did I get into this and why do I do it? You know what I mean? It's like, oh, I was like, oh, I know like I have a future and I can make it. But there's also things about the business. There's just things about even just like dealing with other people that I just like, I don't like. And part of the business is acting like that stuff is okay.
Yeah.
And it's hard to, for me anyway, I want a lot of things like it's hard to rectify being like, yo, that's not okay. I'm not, no, we ain't doing that. Yeah. And it's like, but if you don't say that in the right way, you might be pegged as a person who is, you can't work with them. You might be, you know, you might get the angry black man, and we don't need that for diversity. We don't need you guys anymore. You know what I mean? We have this racially ambiguous, not even a person. We have this plant that has AI jokes that just come out of it when you push a button. Like, what's their perspective? You know, what's going on there?
I mean, honestly, this all changed over the pandemic. Like, this all, like, the whole going viral as a comedian, that all happened during the pandemic. I mean, think about JL, right? Like,
yeah,
like he took on a whole nother level with the Trump
still
stuff.
Complaining.
And then, well, I mean, Sarah Cooper did come through lip syncing and stole that thunder.
Yo, how Sarah hit him with a better impression and didn't say a word? Got him.
That guy who's on SNL right now is really good, though.
He's great. He's great.
He's really good.
He's like, he's been out the gate just. I think he's like the silent killer of every sketch that he's in. He's always bringing it. And matter of fact, just speaking of SNL as a whole, it's good.
It's, I would say every episode there's been at least one sketch that's made me laugh pretty hard. And I always laugh at Weekend Update, because I laugh at Weekend Update for two reasons. One, Colin and Che like have great chemistry, and they're so comfortable with each other that like their riffs are even funnier than like their planned bits sometimes. Like when they did the when Che did the April Fool's joke on Colin where the audience wasn't laughing at his shit. And then he was like, I thought I wasn't mic'd. Like, I'm just bobbing. She's like, I told them not to laugh at you. He's like, that's the meanest thing you've ever done to me. And I'm like, that's the kind of stuff that's like really genuinely funny. And that's the kind of shit that people appreciated at shows like Outliers, where you could see friends genuinely like riffing on each other and like kind of hazing each other, but like in a playful way.
Yeah,
it's like, well, you feel like you're in the room with friends. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like there's that's the thing too, where it's like, I think in talking about like the stand up scene.
Yeah,
I think in different spaces, meaning like the, let's say like the mainstream space. Like there's like mainstream space, there's like edgelordy space, right? Mm. And it's like, we've been in all those spaces. You go in an edgelordy space and there's some things that are like, oh, this is a joke, but is it though?
Yeah.
Like, should I fight you right now? Like I want to, but this don't seem, you know, this don't seem right. This shouldn't be what I'm doing, right? Yeah. And then in the mainstream space, I feel like it's not really about that, like real classic funny back to back like that. It's just more of just like, oh, this thing is popular now. Let's talk about this. This is fun. Like it's like very safe. And I think like what I like is like in the middle. It still hasn't been like. Are you familiar with Jess Tom?
Yeah, yeah, I've done a few shows with them.
Yeah. I think Jess is real dope, real funny. And it's just like, I know like the way Jess like constructs a joke and performs, it's very like, it feels like in that middle space, like and not even a middle, but just like kind of like an alt space, kind of like how Maria Bamford, it's like, you might not think to go see somebody like her perform or see her perform, but you see like, oh, that's a comedian. And this is an act. This is like a good act. I was thinking about today, like, yo, you wouldn't, what a Richard Pryor survivor stand out in this era. You know what I mean? Like,
ooh, yeah, because he was so unfiltered. He might get canceled. He might have got canceled before he got started.
Yeah.
I feel like that would happen to Patrice. Patrice, you know, a lot of people consider him one of the greatest.
Yeah, I think
that
he's one of the greats.
If he had stayed alive, he would have had that peak, and then he would have had a fall around now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because that's the thing that happens with everybody. You know, like, that's an incredible thing and terrible thing about this industry, is that you're going to have a bunch of ups and you're going to have a bunch of downs. Like, think about The Rock had a terrible first part of this year because of Black Adam. You know, obviously we got Jonathan Majors. Yeah. It's like it's very unclear still as to what really happened, but so far he's lost everything but the Marvel shit, and that's just because
and I think they're so Disney by sticking by the black community on this one.
Well, I mean, I think they're so tethered to him right now that they, if like things were to come out, I mean, there's no way that they're not having a discussion about either Damon Idris or Calvin Harrison Jr. like superimposing their faces onto the Kang stuff for Loki season 2 or something. You know what I mean?
I mean, I'm gonna be quite honest with you. My perfect my choice for Kang right now, really left field. I want Denzel as a villain.
That would be dope.
I want to, if Denzel went like got in the gym, got on the Marvel regimen, and just like got Diesel, and he was the guy who was Kang. I think that could be insane.
I don't even know if he needs to go to the gym, bro. They'd be.
You think he just?
Yeah, did you see Macbeth?
Just body, CGI his body.
Did you see Macbeth? He was supposedly killing niggas and going to war and stuff. They just put him in a decent suit where he looked healthy.
Okay.
But he didn't have to be ripped or nothing. I mean, he is going to be a gladiator too, so who knows? Maybe he's in the gym right now.
Maybe, but that's what I'm saying. But just like, yo, you know what that would do. Like, you know that you would watch that movie and be like, yo. It would just change. Like, all these guys are good. I think all these guys are good. But I'm like, you need to. It's like, don't replace him with a contemporary.
Yeah.
Like, when they got, and it ain't the first time they did it, when they got Terrence Howard out of here and they put Don Cheadle in there, you're like, Don Cheadle's in this? Oh, he's great.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a great actor. Like, he's going to cook. He's about to cook. Like,
it's tough. It's tough because it's like.
They could also be like variants. They're going to variant everybody. Just like,
well, I think. This is the only silver lining, I think, for their plan. And I know I got the sun going in and out of my eyes. So
yeah, I'm about to turn the light. That's why I have to turn my brightness up. I'm like, he just glistened. He got this manager. The manager's out there with a light in the background.
Listen to me. I think the silver lining is Ant-Man didn't do that great compared to past Marvel movies. So mm-hmm. I wonder how many, I mean, I'm sure millions of people still saw them. But the post-credit scenes... Though that you know the one I'm talking about,
the first one, with everybody
in the tomb, that's the one I think that fucks it up. But if they can go back and they Star Wars episode, the prequels, the original trilogy, George Lucas went back and added effects and stuff. They could, in theory, use their money. They're going to take a hit, but superimpose whoever they get to replace Kang in that scene. And like essentially in all the scenes, like they got the AI at this point. They can do it. And I think that would be incredible as a redo to set up the Kang Dynasty. I think it is possible. It's just about how long do you wait before you really pull the trigger on that, right? Because it's been a slow trickle of information about what went down. Yeah. And so it's like, I don't want to see my man keep losing jobs if he genuinely is innocent.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if he's not and there's like all this evidence, start saying it because it's like it's a really weird thing as a fan. You know what I mean?
I don't know if you heard this, but they've saying that like they were like women who went to the DA's office to like corroborate the story. Yeah. And it's like, bro, it's like fuck. But just because like it's
It's bad, man, because, you know, something that good can't be, like, someone who's that good of an actor and that kind of intensity, they can't be a great person.
Broken.
It's like when you're eating Chick-fil-A. You're like, this chicken's so damn good. This got to be some problematic views.
They have to hate gay people. Like, they have to. You have to. It's like, hey, here is the recipe for the greatest chicken in the world. I will give this to you, but you have to hate gay people. You're like, then they took a bite of the sandwich and said, fuck them. You know what I mean? We'll close on Sundays. You know, we'll give it a rest. It's also interesting because, like, this is the second time Marvel's had to face, like, a kind of recasting controversy, quote-unquote, because, like, when Chadwick passed.
It's always with the black men, too.
Except
for Edward Norton to Mark Ruffalo. That was it.
Oh, yeah, that was a smooth transition. Yep, yep. That's what they're going to do for Kang. They're going to just go and find Kang in a shed, and it's just going to be insert black actor here. And he's going to be like, you found, we was Kangs. He's going to be like, Kang, we was Kangs. Oh, you look different. I'm a variant. And we're going to move on. Because like it's one of those things where like, as fans, we want it to be consistent. Because it's like, Marvel, this is the game you playing. you the one who wants to do these post-credit scenes mm-hmm. on all the movies where now I got to watch, I got to fake watch the credits and I got to just sit through all this just to see 2 minutes of a movie I'm probably going to see in 2 years anyway. So I'm just seeing bonus movie.
Yeah.
Who the fuck cares? But now I'm like, oh, I'm so invested. Like now I don't care.
I don't care either, man.
I don't
everything
care.
Had a post-credit scene. Like the Super Mario Brothers had a post-credit scene apparently. I was like, no. As soon as that movie ended, I was like, I left.
Yeah, I left. Thanks, Universal. Thanks for sponsoring that for me. But I was like, I'm out. I watched the post-credit scene on YouTube.
Oh, okay. Oh,
it's a Yoshi egg cracking? So I'm going to spend 10 more minutes of my life waiting to see a cracked egg? I will play the video game. Like, you're not going to do this to me.
Yeah, at least Sonic, when it ended, like, it was Tails, right? Tails, like, you know, they revealed Tails. So you're like, oh, shit, Tails. Where it's like, they already showed Yoshi's in the Super Mario Brother. They had a Yoshi world, so I don't need to see a tease for an egg.
I don't need to see that. Unless you're going to have, like, Wario or somebody coming out and be like, okay, this is crazy. This might be different.
So
like,
Jad Black, said he wants Pedro Pascal as Wario. I think Luigi, you get John Leguizamo.
Done.
It seems like a no-brainer, right? I just casted it.
If they don't do that, they bugging. And John Leguizamo was talking a lot of shit too. He was like, it's not diverse enough. He mad as hell he didn't get that check, yo.
He is so
Everybody else was getting it. We were speaking about streaming early, and I probably should have put it up then. And it's real quick, but after Chris Rock did his Netflix special live, do you think more comedians are going to go that route?
No. That's not at all? I thought that was like...
I thought it was brave. Got him.
I think that was his worst special by far. And this is from someone who wasn't the biggest fan of Tambourine. That's the name of his last one, right?
Yeah, Tambourine. Tambourine was the one where he talked about basically being single.
Divorce and stuff, yeah. So for this one, like, one, I thought his outfit was fucking crazy. With those black platform shoes. I don't know what that was about.
Had like wings on the back of them.
I don't know who told him to wear that. But
that was out of my price range. I know it.
I think it being live and then also knowing why he filmed it in Baltimore is like, it's just so so malicious. Not even petty. I would just say malicious. And I get it. He's obviously angry, right? And he has every right to be angry. Yeah. But I think he really lost a lot of people that were like with him when he called Jada a bitch. I think that that's when a lot of people, I was watching on social media live, like that's when people turned on him.
Yeah.
And again, like this kind of goes back to what happens with a lot of famous black comedians, especially, is that their audiences become predominantly white. And so there's sometimes not people in your inner circle to check you, or they're eating off of you, so they're not going to check you in some of your
language.
They
can't check you. I think it's twofold too, because it's Chris Rock calling her a bitch. It's not like if Mike Epps did the same thing and said like similar, you're not going to get on Mike Epps about it because it's just like, I feel like there's like a cultural thing.
Yeah, but I mean, you also know something's a little off with Mike Epps. You know, he ain't quite right. Every performance I've always asked myself, like, is Mike Epps okay? You know Mike Epps is out of his goddamn mind when you people is his most straight role. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
I was like, Mike Epps is in this, and he's actually acting normal? This is weird.
Yeah, I think Mike Epps is like, I really wanted to see him do that Richard Pryor thing.
I heard he did really well like with the audition stuff. Same with Marlon Wayans. I heard like they had some great people that were being considered, but I think it's a story, and this is interesting because this is something I learned about the industry. Even no matter how much someone is revered,
tell us all your secrets.
Especially a black artist is revered, if they're not,
you still a nigga.
But if they're not like
rich nigga, poor nigga, talent nigga, still nigga.
If they don't have, I don't know where to go from that. I guess it's like if they don't have like undeniable like appeal, which is like despite their flaws. Like for instance, right, there's a Michael Jackson biopic being made with Antoine Fuqua. And it's going to be starring Randy Jackson's son, right? So it's like all kinds of conflict, like conflicts of interest and shit.
Yeah,
but it's going to be gamebusters because they're going to have the rights to Michael's music. They're going to be able to make whatever. Even though if they maybe shy away from the kids shit, they're going to still be able to make a movie that's centered around his music and his performance as an artist.
And that's all you need. It's the biggest
That's all you need. But, like, for me, like, when I first got here at Universal, one of the ideas I pitched was about Tupac, right? I'm not going to go into the detail. But
yeah,
I'm
you told me. We talked about it.
Because I still kind of want to explore this in some capacity, but I was pitching
it to... Don't talk about it too much. Just sprinkle
I was
it.
Pitching it to Malcolm D. Lee, and he was like, I get what you're trying to do.
Hold on a second. That was a name. Let me just pick that up for you.
He was... He was like,
he is the best man.
Yeah, he is.
He's a producer, yeah.
He said he was... He understood what I was trying to do, but that Tupac is such a polarizing character because of his history, especially with women. And his violent lyrics, he's like, I don't even know you get black folks 100% behind this idea, right? And so when I think about, what brought this on? What were we talking about?
We were talking about, we went from Chris Rock to doing things.
Oh, the Richard Pryor. Because Richard Pryor has such a conflicted history, especially with domestic abuse and the drug use and... Like, just growing up in a brothel. Like, it's a dark story.
Yeah. He was in a brothel, yeah. Like,
and so, like, from a studio standpoint, it's like, am I willing to put in the 30 mil that we put into something like the United States versus Billie Holiday kind of thing into this that's going to have very limited audience appeal? You know what I mean?
But I think, and this is the thing, I think the change, I think audience appeal is going to start changing because I think that when people say audience appeal, obviously you want the widest net. And you want to be the most inclusive. Like, for instance, like we're talking about the Mario Brothers movie. It's making so much money because it's like there's no real race in there. There's not like a lot of sex in there at all. I don't think there's any sex, but like there's no sex. Yeah. Like the violence is very cartoony. It's with an IP that has been around for like 30 plus years.
Yeah.
Right? Damn it, for like it's
40 so something like, almost.
From 40, from like Donkey Kong, whatever. They had like Famicom, like all this stuff, right? So it's like you have all these things basically at your disposal. And I don't know, man. Like, I think what the audience is like when you have those audiences that are just so big and inclusive with everybody, you kind of, I don't know if you don't say anything with the art. You're just like, hey, it just feels like more of a money grab. Because like if you made like a like the Richard Pryor movie, if you did a biopic like that, it's like, that's not for everybody.
Yeah.
You make that being like, yo, this is rated R. This is a rated R movie about this polarizing figure. And this is what you're going to get.
And
like it would be
that,
the opposite.
You say that, Mike, and you'll get nothing but closed doors.
Oh, of course. Or you have HBO, we'd have like their originals or something. You'd have like a studio who's like, no, we just want to do this and we want to make a great movie and do this like as our award darling. Like it has to be done to such a level where it's like, it might not be a moneymaker. It might not be this thing, but it'll be something that will at least be either a front runner or get enough nominations to be like, this is dope. Because it's not just, I think money is part of it, but I think there's also these other things like accolades, being able to like put something up that's in the public consciousness. I think that's important too for some of these studios.
I mean, yes and no. I think it all depends on like what the slate is and like what the vision is for the person at the very top. You know what I mean? Like that's the thing. Like I've learned so much about how little exploration there is of like original ideas. It's all about IP and not necessarily IP as in like, Super Mario Brothers. That's something that everyone's familiar with. Like it can be brands, but it could also be like combinations of like stars, right? For instance, like a Universal Ticket to Paradise. It's a huge hit. And if it's pitched as IP, because essentially it's like George Clooney, Julia Roberts, neither one of them have done a romantic comedy in a long time. You put them on an island, give them a decent budget. It's going to be gangbusters. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that counts as IP.
Ticket to Paradise.
As a new
IP.
Yep. Well, I mean, no, I guess it's established IP because it's like...
From where?
Because it's like these established stars, George Clooney and Julia Roberts, and then romantic comedies. Easy, low budget.
Yeah, but see, okay. Well, I'm saying like the idea of Ticket to Paradise isn't a... It's not like an IP that exists already. Like the formula exists.
Yes.
Like,
but formulas should be considered IP now.
Really?
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, so oh, it's like hey, we're gonna have let's have Jason Statham or some like, oh, hey, The Rock. Action adventure.
Yep, exactly.
In Guam for some reason. And it's just like the greatest thing ever, just because you have like The Rock doing an action adventure movie. Yeah. That's crazy. That's intellectual property. That's why AI is coming to take everything over. Like, if the formula is intellectual property, like it's like peanut butter and jelly, oh, that's an intellectual property. It's two things together, it works. It's like, no, I thought the sandwich, the different types of sandwiches might be the intellectual property, how somebody does it. I think in the terms of comedy, that's what like I am wondering about as like in seeing like the development of stand-up, to be like, all right, yeah. So the intellectual property being like the jokes that you write and what you perform, right? And seeing like what comics are talking about, because sometimes it just goes to just people talk about like pop culture shit. Cool, but it's not really intellectual property. Nobody's like doing, I don't feel like the people who are internet famous are doing jokes that are either for the huge audience, which is smart, right? Be like, yo, here's some like racial stereotypical jokes. Here are some jokes that are very stereotypical that everybody can laugh at, and I just do it in my own way. Or they say, instead of using intellectual property, and we've all seen it, I'll just do crowd work because I'm not wasting my intellectual property.
That's a lot of these videos are just like spontaneous crowd work and stuff. That's all it is. You know, it's I had one of the studio execs I was working with. He, you okay, Mike?
Yeah, I'm good. I thought you were going to keep talking the way.
Well, it's just you can hear all the stuff you're doing. So that's
let me turning on lights and things. Yeah. Because it started looking like I was like descending into madness.
Oh, yeah.
So on my screen, it was just getting. Oh, see, look, see, yo, what happened to us? You ain't going to tell me? Like, yo, Mike, are you descending into madness over there?
Like, you look crazy. Like, you know that.
How?
You can see yourself on the camera.
I mean, see, this is why I need somebody to come over and help me with this.
This is why you need a manager, bro. You need a manager to tell you, hey, put the lights on.
Put the light, man. All my stuff, man. I hope you enjoy the management's scenario, and we can talk more about that after. But it is a very interesting thing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely holding my person accountable. Like, cause Brandon, if I close some deals, I want to see some money. You know, a deal is not done until you get that check.
Yep.
So, yep. I'm like, you know, hey, yep. Hey, when
you,
we gonna get
you
paid?
Have a lawyer? Get a lawyer?
I got some people in consideration right now. You know what I mean?
Okay. I got a name of somebody who's like really good. Too.
Okay.
Really good.
You sure they're good though? Because I'm gonna ask a question from Atlanta. Do you think your black lawyer is better than these white lawyers that might want my business? I'm being facetious when I ask that, by the way.
I know.
That's such a crazy scene. Like, that dude was like, probably not.
Because it comes to connections and all that. I mean, my thing is like, who is it? Jalen Hurts, out of NFL, who's like, he's the highest paid now.
Yeah.
And his whole team is nothing but black women. His whole team. This whole team, they got it done. I think that there's a
juicy.
Yeah, I mean, who, Jalen?
No, not like the.
Run away from it, Brandon. Run away. You just got management. Run away from this. Don't fall into the trap. No, I'm talking about the team. The team is juicy. It's like we're coming. I'm talking about these fruits I have over here. What do you mean? What kind of fruits are they? I don't know. Peaches. Mario, you just stay away from it.
I am going to start. I am worried about saying like something that gets me canceled before I even get started.
Man, we're supposed to do a whole run of episodes, and now Brandon's like, because I can even tell right now how much you're holding back, and I'm just like, all right, so this is what I'm just going to be carrying us through.
I'm not holding back,
man. You hold it back a little bit. You hold it back a little bit.
I'm not holding back too much, man. I'm just, it's a. You know, I'm not fully Hollywood. I'm not Hollywood until I get that first six figure check. That's what I'm Hollywood.
That's what I'm gonna take
everybody out. Everybody in our comedy circle out. I'm gonna take us out to Sweet Chick. We're gonna have all the fried chicken and lemonade.
Wait, hold on. Wait, you gonna take us to Sweet Chick with your six figure deal?
Yeah, we're gonna get some fried chicken. Some good ass fries.
I'm gonna get that. Sounds so anti black. When I get my six figure deal, I'm gonna take out a fried chicken and get y'all some lemonade. And we gonna lick our fingers like this. We made it, niggas.
What's wrong with having good food and good laughs?
Oh man, I'm thinking you want to go to not even, yeah, because you couldn't take people out to the upscale spot.
No.
I was thinking about sending people like that. You can't.
No.
You can't.
That'll be the after party for selective folks. You know what I mean?
Already gets exclusive as branding gets to the top.
Because I already know, like, if I have a limited meal at Sweet Chick, if I'm like, hey, like, order whatever from this a la carte menu, and these are the drinks for me, I know at least two of the niggas that we hang out with go to the bar and be like, hey, can I get some dot liquor on that guy's tab? I know what they're going to do. No, oh, I got limit, folks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, other people are bringing guests. They're just bringing extra people to your joint. Yeah, I said, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. They bring other people.
Yeah. Folks, here's the thing. I'm just going to wait till the live show doesn't bring this up, but fuck it. Because, you know,
I'm
still mad at you about bringing that barbecue to my barbecue.
What? Save it for the live show.
That's the rudest thing anyone's ever done to me.
What? No, it's not, because I texted you.
I didn't understand your text. It sounded like a riddle.
It was so simple. I said, I'm bringing barbecue. It's like, yo, I was out with my lady. We had a barbecue. I'm trying to come. Because you said it this time. I got to go. Rental late, but I'm coming with that. Is that cool? Maybe, I don't know if you said it was cool or you just probably like gave me a passive aggressive thumbs up.
I probably did.
You probably did.
I didn't think you were going to really bring food. Just like that one time, I didn't think you were going to really get married.
Listen, yeah, true. But you know what happened? You know what also happened that day? You came over and someone pulled Che Jost on you, where they said, everybody, don't laugh at Brandon. Don't respond to Brandon. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
See? You vaguely remember that.
No. I talk about it all the time.
Which is worse?
Oh, both of them are equally bad. That was a day of betrayal. I'm never going to have a barbecue with anybody.
A day of betrayal?
I'm never having a barbecue again.
Oh, my God.
There's barbecue etiquette, and everybody violated it.
You know what?
I had drinks. No. I had seasoned meats. I had sides.
No, yeah, you know what? You did.
I did it up.
You did. But you know what? You know, I've been therapy now, so now I got weapons. And what I did is I texted first. Because old Mike Brown, you know what old Mike Brown would have did? Old Mike Brown would have came to the barbecue while eating the ribs. They're like, hey, what's up, bro? What's going on? Y'all cooking yet? You got food on the grill yet? And you'd be like, this nigga. But instead, Mike's like, yeah, hey, got some ribs. I'm coming with ribs. I don't want anybody to be, I don't want any trouble. You know what I mean? I don't want any problems.
Eat the ribs before you get to the house, because God forbid your ribs were better than my ribs, which they weren't. That would have been a problem for me.
You know what? Now, old Mike Brown would have said how the ribs tasted. New Mike Brown is like, leave it to the universe. Leave it to the universe. You know? But for more fun things like that, make sure to come to Comedy Outliers.
That's right. Friday, July 7th. 10:30 show. It's a little bit later than we usually do, but that's because we're going to be partying. We old now, but we can still party once a night, y'all. We gotta be young and free again.
I mean, listen, I stopped really eating processed foods. I'm fully hydrated. Okay. I hit the gym. So
look at you.
So listen, I'm good for the 10. And it's 10 o'clock. I think it's 10 o'clock doors. 10:30 show.
Yep.
So if I were you, I would make sure I'd be there around 10 o'clock because we're going to start the show at 10:30. You don't want to come.
Yep.
You know, I'll try to look for a seat, whatever. That's what's happening. And we're going to chill after. So make sure y'all come out to that. And yeah, we back. We back outside. We're going to have some more. I'm still going to I'm gonna get on Brandon about more things because I see that he's holding back on the podcast. So I'm going to do that. I'm going to get us to a new section. But also, let us know what you think of this episode.
That's
right.
Hit us
up online.
Hit us up at Comedy Outliers on all social media platforms. Hit Mike up at Yo Mike Brown. Hit me up at American Collins. You can get tickets at our respective websites, AmericanCollins.com, OThatMikeBrown.com. Come
Yo,
fuck
Mike
with us.
Com as well. Same thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Come
yeah,
fuck with us.
You know, yeah.
No, same thing. Same thing, you know, most of us.
You know what I'm saying? You got moving images on your website. You doing the thing. You doing the thing.
I mean, you know. I'm
just over here looking cute on mine. You know what I mean? We making it happen.
I mean, listen. We told y'all years ago we ain't playing no games. We wasn't playing a game. You think that you look back like this? This is how I look. I'm always talking about shit before the end. You look back at it and say, you know, Brandon was in Grits, right? And he was writing sketches, right? Was you there when he was writing sketches? Guess what? He has a manager right now focused on making sure that y'all see the things that he writes now.
That's right. That's right.
Stop playing. That's all I'm saying. This is shit I'm talking. Like, yo, stop playing. You've seen, we talked about Che. He's closed our show. We've talked about Ali Wong. They've been at the show. Stop. We know what we're doing. It's like we're trying to give you the future right now. We're trying to give you some dope shit right now. And it's on y'all. And I'm tired of trying to tell people about what's dope and what's not dope. I'm tired. Y'all going to get left.
They're going to listen or they're going to find out the hard way. I'll let that be ambiguous as it is. I just threatening people.
Yeah, you just what's juicy? What?
All right, Joe, we'll talk to you soon.
Am I playing with y'all? Now you pretending it's all over.
Yeah. Phone it in, dog.